new CBS Sunday.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
When something is lost,
everyone's looking for something.
He finds it.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker. New Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Fights don't stop, and the SOC's with you every step of the way. It's a State of Combat podcast, CBS Sports, your boy, the Brian Campbell. Step two on UFC's ambitious three fights, eight nights, Jacksonville, Florida, is in the books. We got you covered with a recap. We got you covered with a preview looking ahead to Saturday's heavyweight tilt at UFC Fight Night Jacksonville 3. We also have a fine interview coming your way with Calvin Kattar dropping by fresh off that knockout of Jeremy Stephens last Saturday. Still recovering, by the way. He's going to let us know what it was like to fight in that empty arena, what it was like to keep climbing that ladder and the featherweight division. And we also got some royalty with you today, as always. It's the Hall of Famer. It's the earthquake survivor. The man who brings that heat. It's Sugar Rashad Evans. Rashad, my man, they got you and I working around the clock. You and I working 1 a.m. on CBS Sports HQ last night. It's bright and early. We back, brother.
Hey, we back indeed. But listen, being busy has never been a bad thing for me, man. So keep it coming back, baby.
That's what I'm saying. Look, I said it very early. I said, look, we're clowning Dana White when he's doing whatever he can to make it happen, when he's saying ridiculous things.
It's like hiding from cancer. You can't hide from this thing. You can't hide.
You can't hide. But then I was like, you know, he may end up being Robin Hood when this is all said and done. Uncle Dana did get us back in the game. So shout out to that. And how'd you like Wednesday night fights, Rashad? Can you get used to that?
I can definitely get used to that, man. It delivered, you know, on so many different levels. You know, it just wasn't all one style of fights. You know, you had technical fights, and you had those ones that had you at the edge of your seat the whole fight. So good card.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Continue to follow us at State of Combat on Twitter. 5-star review season if you like what you hear, and I know you do, wherever you can find fine audio, please. Okay, you know that business. Let's get the business out of the way. Let's get into the fight business, the hurt business. It was a light heavyweight tilt Wednesday night in the main event. Former title challengers Anthony Smith, Glover Teixeira, meeting really for a chance to kind of take that one step closer, maybe one win away for the winner from getting back at John Jones. Rashad, you and I sort of laid the groundwork coming in that if Anthony Smith could keep his distance, rely on his speed, be the fresher, younger fighter against the 40-year-old Glover Teixeira, he'd have a good opportunity, although the fight very close on paper to do it, for nearly two rounds. Lionheart had a great game plan. But hey, dude, watch out. The old man still got it. Glover Teixeira's power caught up with him. How impressed are you now? Four fights in a row for Glover Teixeira over the past year that he's actually still in this and still a legitimate threat at 40.
I'm very impressed. You know, I understand how hard that can be. You know, in order to train yourself at the level you need to, as you get older as an athlete, it gets tremendously difficult because you can't take the shots as you used to when you're a young and up-and-coming fighter. So you have to modify your training. He's done a great job of making all the adjustments and making those adjustments where he's actually adding skills to the game. He's actually getting better and perfecting that already great game. You know, as we've seen, you know, he weathered a storm that you don't typically see a guy that is 40 years old on what would seem to be the back end of his career take that kind of punishment from a younger fighter who's got that spark still in his punches and still has that pressure. And he absorbed those shots and, defensively speaking, was very responsible, but then came back with some shots of his own. And then you just seen it became a war of attrition midway through that second or third round. And you just seen Glover Teixeira start to really pull away. And it was unfortunate for Anthony Smith because he fought so well, and that's the best I've seen Anthony fight in a long time early out. You know, normally he's a late starter, but he came out on fire. He was really sharp. It just seemed to me that his corner, as it was mentioned in the broadcast, they got a little excited. And as this unfolds, and this, I mean, these fights without an audience, as it unfolds more, we're going to learn more and more about how these fighters approach being fighting in an empty arena and what these coaches, you know, do as far as communication, because you do have to adjust your coaching style, because when you're around and you have a big arena, you're yelling at the top of your lungs, you know. But when it's not that many people, you got to understand the fact that you got to be able to give direction without putting your fighter into a frantic fighting pace.
That's a great point. I thought Daniel Cormier on the broadcast last night really nailed the idea that when your fighter can hear everything you're saying clearly without a crowd, you can't just pepper him every single second with instruction, with this, with that. This is just the beginning of sort of the armchair quarterbacking we're going to do, by the way, of Smith's corner. Because they let their guy out there to take a beating. And Smith it was almost unfortunate that Lionheart is that tough, Rashad, because he took a freaking beating. I don't know what else we could say. I mean, the problem here was this. Glover Teixeira, right at the end of the second round, hurt Smith, kind of figured out the timing, got inside, landed those punches that really bothered Smith's eyes and started to slow him down. Basically, from the midway round three, I thought you could have stopped this fight because Teixeira's landing bombs. He's dropping Smith. He's getting on top. There was a problem, though. The problem was Glover. We love him. Great performance. He never quite went for the finish, meaning he never quite mounted up, tried to land 15 unanswered strikes, and gave referee Jason Herzog that justifiable excuse. Okay, he's had enough. And then you mix that with Anthony Smith, who was just credible enough defensively while taking a beating and showing toughness to not go out, to not be in that marriage, that combination was really bad for Smith's long-term health. Because over the next 2.5 rounds, I mean, he took the fact that Smith's corner, Rashad, let him go out in that fifth round. When he came back, he's a shell of himself after round four. He's crumbled. His eyes, his face, swollen, bloody mess. He tells his corner, my teeth are falling out. And by the way, Ariel Helwani ended up having a text exchange with Smith after. They weren't veneers like was erroneously reported on Twitter. It was real teeth. He had two teeth fall out. And his corner's just like, breathe deep. You got this. Come on, let's go. Rashad, we've been in this debate before. Like, somebody's going to have to get really hurt before we step in and change things. I don't know what you can change here other than just looking out for your fighter better, because this type of sustained beating, you know, Smith's okay, so to speak, but it may take off 3 years at the end of his career that we don't even know about yet.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of weird because it seemed like both of those fighters were caught in a conundrum. And by that, I mean, you know, Glover Teixeira had the ability to finish him, but at the same time, he didn't necessarily get the green light in Anthony Smith's reaction to let him know that Anthony was at that place. And for a guy who's pounding and who has gas issues, the last thing you want to do is think that you have a guy out and then go for the kill, but then he finds a way to muster up enough strength to come back and then put you in that position where you just had him. And Anthony Smith gave him signs of that, because whenever Glover Teixeira did get up or give him some space, he did hit with the pop like he still had his legs underneath him. So whenever fighters still hitting like they have pop, you have to always proceed with caution, because if you don't, then that's when you get caught and only fools rush in, and you don't want to get caught like that. So he had to be responsible in that respect. But at the same time, you know, the corner instruction, you know, you want to give your guys good instruction. You want your guy to go out there and push himself and bring something out of himself that he does not know he have. But at the same time, you have to be able to look at your corner, look at your guy and say, is this fight a winnable fight? Is this fight something that is going to mentally scar him? You know, and I talk about it all the time. You know, a lot of fighters, you know, they have a little bit of PTSD because of situations like this where they get traumatized in the cage. And this is one of those situations where Anthony's been traumatized, and this is going to stick with him for a long time, because when you take a beating like this over a long period of time, for some reason in your mind, only thing you remember is just that beating. You know what I'm saying? And you remember that feeling. So when it comes time for you to step on the line to go and compete again, you have all these red lights and all these stop and goes and all these apprehension in your technique just because you're remembering what happened before when you're in a cage.
Yeah, and look, the sport of boxing has a much deeper, brutal backstory of deaths, of straight up deaths in the ring where guys take too much of a beating. And I think because of that, you've seen over the last 10, 20, 30 years, a great change in how referees, corners, ringside doctors stop fights. Boxing fights sometimes get stopped too early because you get that sustained head trauma over and over. Obviously, if you're in a fight that you're losing, it's just not worth it to try to set up some, you know, great rally, home run, grand slam in the last inning situation. So you see a lot of boxing fights stop because of those deaths in the ring. And MMA, in a good sense, there's never been this great tragedy. So there's more, it seems like there's more of a, I don't know, there's more of a, like, let's give the guy a chance. This is a moral victory if we go the distance. There's too much of that tough guy stuff. Because, Rashad, I tend to fall on the side of, like, caution in this debate. Yet even last night, going on social media, there's always tough guys on social media, meaning fans, pundits that I follow who aren't fighters, but they're, like, the old school just bleed mentality. Even those guys are like, why the hell is this guy coming out for round five? Now, I want to ask you this. I don't know much about Smith's trainer. Is it Montoya, his head guy?
Yeah.
Is this the same guy who last year left that guy Thomas Gifford to hang out to dry in the cage and keep getting battered when he was getting knocked down? And is this the same trainer who sent Rocky Pennington back out for round five against Amanda Nunes when she asked out of the fight after round four? Because if it is, this is a bad track record.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think if that is the case, you know, I think what it comes down to when you're coaching these guys and these guys want to have the fighters and they want to push them to the limit, you know, they're not looking at anything past this moment, you know, and they know that, you know, going into the fight, how bad their fighter wanted it. And, you know, they want to push that for them because they know the disappointment that their fighter is going to feel if they don't push through it. But at the same time, as a trainer, you got to understand that, you know, when you put your fighter in a fight and they're overmatched, that the apprehension that they learn in that fight or they receive in that fight, it sticks with them. And my case in point is David Loazo. David Loazo, when he fought Rich Franklin, before he fought Rich Franklin, he was an absolute terror. But in that fight, he took a beating, a one-sided beating for a long period of time. And then after that, he never mentally was the same. You know, it just became harder for him to fight. And it's the trauma that does it, you know? So hopefully Anthony does not experience that. I mean, he already has going into this, like, you know, he was 17, 18 losses. So those are the kind of, you know, it starts to add into that pile and it knocks your confidence down as a fighter.
Yeah, that's a tough stretch for Smith when you consider he's only 31, but he was just figuring out how good he can be. Yet he's got almost 50 pro fights. I mean, there's mileage on there. He just went through, you know, surgeries on his broken hand, sat out 10 months, and then the home invasion. I mean, that's a rough stretch. I guess I can understand the theory of his team going, this is such an important fight where he's either going up right back into the title picture or he's going to the back of the line. But when you look at what he texted back to ESPN's Ariel Helwani, this is Anthony Smith, about the injury he suffered, broken nose, broken orbital bone, two missing teeth, bad cut under his right eye, as you saw on the video, like an absolutely brutally swollen face. Yeah. You just wonder how much of that prevented, man.
Because, as a coach, another thing as a coach, like in MMA, we see it all the time. Like guys pull out victories on the jaws of defeat, like on the clinch, like on the edge of defeat, they always pull it out. And in MMA, it happens more in boxing because of the fact that we wear, you know, smaller gloves and stuff, and we can hit with more points of attack. So you do have those moments, and we have seen guys on the brink of disaster to come back and win that. So you hoping that's going to be your guy, but at the same time, when your guy is giving no signs that internally he has that in him, or he doesn't even believe that's going to happen, then that's when you got to be like, all right, ref, he's seen enough. And I think Anthony was giving him that signs because he kept looking down at the ground. You know, he was just dejected. And if I'm fighting that guy, and that's another thing, like if I'm fighting him and I'm going over to chair and I'm reading his body language, I know that I have him. And at that point, I can just take my time deciding on how much I'm going to let him breathe or not.
Yeah, this is Mark Montoya, the coach of, what is that, Factory X? Is that the name of the team?
Yeah.
Yeah, tough stretch right there to go out on your shield like that. But Glover Teixeira finally dropped Anthony Smith easily in round five, by the way. Took him down again later and then finally just sat on his chest and unloaded that barrage that got him out of there. But let's talk about Glover one more time here. You'd have to believe he's, you know, one more big win away in a suddenly somewhat interesting light heavyweight title picture. John Jones at the top. Dom Reyes coming off that very close performance. You could argue he deserves a rematch. Then you got Jan Blachowicz. Then you got Maheta. Thiago Santos coming back soon. You heard Teixeira in the cage, Rashad. And you're a guy who's rebuilt your body at 40 and really seemed to learn some things along the way. He says he was young and dumb in 2014 when he fought John Jones, but it was going to the UFC's PI. It was asking the right questions, figuring out what he was doing wrong in terms of overtraining and figuring out how to eat. You saw his body in there.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily a wonderland, but he was looking really trim and ready. How important is that wisdom, man, that you sometimes only get at the back end of your career? How much can that be the fountain of youth?
It's very important, especially for, you know, Glover Teixeira, you know, who's been fighting since it was called NHB, No Holds Bar. So that was a different kind of mindset altogether, the way that we trained, the way that we took care of our body. Now I'm graduating to the more professional scale of things where everything is measured, everything is calculated, and everything is peaked for a specific time. So it's all about calculations. And when you're an older fighter, you have to understand how to get the most out of your body without taking the most out of your body. And I think that's what Glover Teixeira has figured out. And when I talked to him, you know, he told me that, you know, his biggest thing is that he does a lot of drill sparring, you know, a lot of controlled sparring where he's taking the ego out of training. And a lot of younger guys who's yet to prove himself, they have a hard time taking the ego out of training. So you see guys go out there and they spar every single day and they do all those, you know, it's like those guys who go to the gym and they bench press every day just so they can say, I got a good bench. You know, that's what the young fighters are like. But when you get older, you realize there's the technical side that actually means more than just the brute force and beating each other up, you know, because you're going to get tough. If you want to fight, you're going to endure it. And Glover's now used all that masterful wisdom to know exactly what he needs to do right now.
It's interesting. I wanted to count him out in this fight and say, okay, you know, nice little comeback here at 40, but Smith is the guy moving up. But man, when you have that experience that Glover had, you still got the fight ending power at any point, but then you work in the patience, the timing. He's tough. We can't count him out, man. You know, I look on paper. I'm like, what if he fought Blachowicz? I'm like, not only would that be fire, but yeah, I could see him winning that. What if he fought an uncertain Maheta coming off an injury? He's a game fighter for all of these. I don't know if he's going to have the chance to fight or beat a John Jones or Dom Reyes, but you keep winning at this level, Rashad, eventually you end up with that opportunity. So shout out to our guy. I mean, I like also the pre-fight packages, which really showcased how he got into this game as like a sparring partner for Chuck Liddell back
in
light heavyweight prime, and to see how much that apprenticeship prepared him. Glover's got a good story, man. Good story.
He's got a great story. I mean, he can take a lot of shots, and even though early out Anthony was stinging him, you know, he didn't get froze too long when he got hit with those shots. You know, by that I mean sometimes when guys are on the later half of their career and they get stung with some shots, they take a little Frankenstein step before they're able to recover. And you don't see him do that, you know? So that means that he still has a good wherewithal and balance after he takes big shots. And that's huge for being a light heavyweight and being how old he is at this point in his career.
And speaking of Thiago Santos, can't wait to see him come back so we can hear the Maheta theme song again, Rashad. Thiago Maheta, Maheta. All right, shout out to Glover Teixeira, Anthony Smith. We're going to take a quick pause for the cause and be right back on the other end. More breakdowns of UFC Jacksonville 2. A look ahead to this weekend and also a chat with Calvin Kattar. Be right back around the corner in 2 and 2.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back. BC Sugar Rashad, Kelvin Kattar to come. Rashad, we got to see referee no-nonsense Keith Peterson back in the house since Dominick Cruz unnecessarily seemed to call him out and tell us what he smelt like.
It's a simple concept. Bitches and cigarettes. Everybody's happy.
I think if you smell like that, you're pretty happy. But that reminded me, by the way, I don't know if you remember this. Remember that boxer, former featherweight champion, Juan Manuel Lopez? Remember Juanma from Puerto Rico, a slugger? He had those two wars with Orlando Salido, in which Juanma was the big favorite. He goes in there against the Mexican Warrior. He gets stopped both times on Showtime. But you remember the post-fight interview after Juanma got knocked out? And, you probably shouldn't have interviewed a guy who just got knocked out. And this is what he said.
Now he's basically saying that the referee stopped the fight because, they have gambling problems. And he told the commission that the referee was a gambler.
That was one of the wilder moments ever. I talked to that translator, by the way, Felix Jesus from Showtime. He was like, yeah, I didn't even know if I should say that out loud. I know we covered this already, but Dom Cruz, come on, stop that crap, man. Let this guy live, all right? Let this guy work. Seriously. What are you doing there? All right. Rashad, also on this night, we had a heavyweight co-main event. Hey, I make fun of him sometimes. I underestimate his craft every time, it seems. But Big Ben Rothwell did what he had to do to get the decision against an OSP who was experimenting with the idea of moving up to heavyweight. And by the way, at 240 pounds, he did sort of look rock solid. Gas tank, however, didn't seem to be there. What are we going to do with Ben Rothwell? Because every time you want to count him out, he'll show you that he's quicker than you think. The submission craft is always there. Now he's calling out Alexei Oleinik. That's kind of a good fight moving forward. Pretty good win overall for Big Ben.
It was a good win for Big Ben. I think that with Big Ben, he needs to do more fights like this. And these are the kind of fights that he can build his confidence off of. Big Ben, he's a bit goofy, but at the same time, he's very dangerous. You know what I'm saying? He's very dangerous and he's sneaky good. He's sneaky good with the wealth of knowledge and experience that you kind of overlook because he's kind of goofy, and I hate to say it, but it's true. You're kind of like, yeah, I'm not losing to this goofy dude, but he's got that skill level, and he's got that wealth of knowledge behind him. And, he can crack too. He's a legit contender, well-rounded fighter, and he needs more fights like this in order to start building that confidence. And I think once you see him have more fights like this on his level and performing the way that that we've seen him last night, then we're going to start to see Ben Rothwell become what I think that he can be, which is a legit contender in this division.
Now, look, OSP landed some big shots late to at least force this to a split decision on the cards. But let's talk about something here, because if you're a layman and you know nothing about fighting, and by the way, I'm not getting in there against anyone taking punches. So I'm not, any criticism from me goes on deaf ears. But if you're watching that as a layman, you're going, why is OSP running away from him when he's probably the bigger striker? Is there any justification for the way OSP fought? Because the whole time you just want to yell at the screen, stand in there and trade with him. But it's obviously easier said than done.
Well, it seemed to me like OSP, instead of bringing the action to heavyweight, he took some of his lazy habits to heavyweight division. Sometimes in light heavy division, he has that standing around thing that he does, and he's able to get away with it because of the fact that he's a bigger guy and guys have to come into him. And then that's when he's able to use that athletic ability, that skill that he has, and that fast, quick twitch to catch people like we've seen with Shogun. So that's when he's been able to use it at light heavyweight. But at heavyweight, he has to change things up a little bit because now he's the guy who's a faster guy. So now he has to pursue the action. And I think later in the fight, when he was realizing that things weren't probably going to go his way, and we seen that last that flurry at the end, he could have been doing that the whole fight. And that's what I was yelling at the screen. I'm like, bro, you had it the whole fight. That was your advantage. And now you're starting to see it, but now it's too late, you know? And I think it was a fail in the fact that he didn't feel as confident as he needed to being in there. But I don't think that being at heavyweight for him is a fail. I just think that he needs to just change his mind about his approach to the fight game.
Yeah, you'd like to see more aggression there. You'd like, but look, you know, Ben Rothwell's sneaky counter shots, you know, causing that clinch, the knees. I mean, he was able to give him pause for sure. I think the other giant standout on this card, Rashad, was Drew Dober at lightweight, coming in on a 2-fight knockout streak. But this was a tough matchup on paper against Alexander Hernandez, and I was a believer. I still am in Hernandez. There's a lot to work with there in terms of a potential title contender. But Drew Dober is what's right now because his southpaw boxing, the quickness, the confidence, getting the second round stoppage against a very game Hernandez, in a division this crowded, like 155, right? You're still going to be 4 or 5 solid wins from really getting to that top. But what did this tell you about Drew Dober's evolution?
It showed me that he's for real. You know, Drew Dober is a real deal. I think in this fight, he showed his skill level, you know, and that's one thing that surprised me. Like, I knew he was good, but what I seen last night was masterful, and you know, and that's when I was realizing that this kid can be something special. You know, he's a great looking kid, has a great body, and you know, has a great style as well too. So, you know, big things that come from him if he can just continue to grow in his projection. And it doesn't seem like there's going to be anything that's going to derail this motion because he believes in himself like no other right now.
Yeah, he's calling out, not calling out negatively, but just saying, look, I'm ready for the rated guys, the higher-end guys. Paul Felder was a name he dropped out there. They brought it back to the announce table. The big red Paul Felder's like, yeah, I don't want to do business on the air, but I kind of like this fight. That would be a very interesting tilt. Shout-out to Ricky Simone here, the bantamweight. Rashad, I don't know how well you are studied on biblical history, but Samson and Delilah, when they cut off Samson's hair, he lost his power.
Right.
Did Ricky Simone cut off the mullet? And he looked damn good. Now, Ray Borg fought his heart out, rising up in weight from flyweight, had trouble making weight. Turned out to be a fun fight, but Ricky Simone did what he had to do to end a 2-fight losing skid, gets a split decision in a fight that seemed a little bit more wider in his way when you look at it. What I love, though, Rashad, was the story afterwards. Why'd you cut your hair? Because I've been on the couch too long. My wife hates it, and I want to start a family now. He basically told America, I'm not getting it done in there until I, you know, we all been there. Sometimes the ladies are like, get rid of that goatee. It looks good on you. And you try to stand firm for a while. But, you know the score at the end of the day, Rashad, okay? You know how that math equation works, right?
Hey, you know, hats off to him for giving into that kind of pressure, because that's the kind of pressure you need to give into, the marital pressure, you know. So that's good on that respect. I think that Ricky Simone is really finding himself, you know, and he's always had that ability to wrestle, but I think now he's making it more meaningful. And by that, I mean, he's using more ground and pound, you know, he's using more control. You know, it's one thing to be able to take a guy down, but, you know, be able to land some shots as well. He's getting better at that. Even though we didn't see him control as much as he's going to need to in order to be a true force in the weight class, we've seen him with the ability to do wash and repeat, which is a very important process if you're going to be a dominant fighter in this weight class, you know. Wash and repeat. How many times can you take a guy down with him fighting and getting back up, you know, because that's a true testament to your wrestling prowess if you can keep on doing something like that. The Kamaru Usman style, you know, Colby Covington style. That's the kind of thing that he should try to look for to implement his style. But I think that, you know, with his growth and continued success, I think this kid can do something in his weight class. This kid, by the way, he beat my godson in the contender series to get on to get in the UFC. So hats off to him.
Hats off to him. Maybe your family's got a receipt coming for him. All right. Okay. All right. I'm always looking out for him. I'm always trying to run
always running back.
All right. All right. Glover Teixeira, we're coming for you.
He's coming.
Also, shout out to the veteran, 41-year-old Andre Arlovski. Rashad, I tried to count him out again. I feel like we're trying to count this guy out for about 10 years. But Philippe Lins came in off that PFL heavyweight championship win in their tournament, landed the big shots early, seemed to hurt Arlovski. You're like, I know how this fight is going to end. Only it didn't. And I thought Lins gassed just enough to allow Arlovski to be busy when it mattered most in that third round to really put the stamp on a solid decision win. I mean, where's Arlovski going here? You know, he's still in the midst of that. He's not done yet. But shout out to Andre Arlovski. He's not done yet, bro.
No, he is not done yet by far. And it's surprising, too, because he surprised me in the areas where I thought he was going to have trouble in this fight. You know, I thought that he was going to have a hard time taking those big shots from a younger, fresher fighter, as he's shown in the past. You know, when you're an older fighter, and I was saying with Teixeira, you know, sometimes when older fighters get hit with shots, you see them kind of stick for a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Have that little that stick, like they're dazed for a second. But you didn't see that with Alistair. You know, he was able to take a shot and still be able to stay in motion without giving too much of a tell, and then fire back. You know, Andre's a master. I remember training with him back in Chicago, you know, training with this guy when he had cancer. You know, his hair was falling out, and he kind of kept it on the secret, but he was training hard and hard every single day. And that let me know the mindset that this guy has. You know, winning to him is something different, and he's getting back to that. And that is good to see, because I think that, you know, who knows? I don't think he can be a champion, but at the same time, fighting the way that he's fighting right now, it's all about having fun in there. And it looks like that's what he's doing.
Yeah. And he's been in the octagon something like 30 or, you know, in the mid 20s in terms of appearances. I mean, it's piling up. He's active. He's always healthy, and he'll give you these in between wins when you count him out. This ended up being some ATT on ATT crime with Brazilian Shrek Conan in one corner and Mikey Brown in the other. Rashad, we know you famously had the storyline of you and John Jones in the same camp, but then splitting. But have you ever had to fight a teammate before? Is that awkward when the coaches sort of take sides and then, you know?
Yeah, that is very awkward. And I don't understand how ATT does that. They do that better than anybody else that I've seen, you know, but it's a weird thing, you know, because when you're in the same camp with somebody, at some point there's going to be some kind of cross-pollination with someone that you train with, training with somebody that you're fighting, and someone saying something. So it's going to be, you're going to know what's going on in the other guy's camp. So it's just amazing to me that they're able to pull it off, like how they do it. And it seems to work for them. I don't know.
It is. You're, by the way, that the drama that you and John Jones had, that was like Kobe Shaq like. That was like, somebody's got to go. Looking back on that, I mean, that was very, very marketable and sellable. I know we've been up and down the road on that story, but those were, you know, that's a big part of John Jones's history, right?
No,
John Evans' big brotherhood.
Yeah, that definitely was. It definitely introduced him to the world in a different kind of way.
Absolutely. Look, Thiago Moises getting a submission heel hook on Michael Johnson, the lightweight. Oh, this was, you know, one of your highlights of the night, because that tap was quick. What does that feel like, Rashad, when you're in a fight and then suddenly you tap that quickly? I mean, we're talking major league pain, right?
Well, I mean, it has to feel way worse for Michael Johnson. You know, typically speaking, that'll suck for anybody. But for Michael Johnson and the run that he's been on lately, it's just been a run of bad luck, you know. And, you know, he's been in fights and he's just been losing by the smallest margins. And you can go back and look at his last few fights and you can just see it's just a little lapse in concentration costing him the most in almost every single one of his last few performances that he's lost, you know. And it's just like, man, it's if he would have won those fights, he would have been one of those guys that we're talking about in the conversation. And when you're talking about guys in the conversation who should be in the conversation, you're talking about a guy like Michael Johnson, who's got wins over Tony Ferguson, who's, you know, who stung Khabib and who's been in there with Justin Gaethje and had one of the greatest fights.
He
beat
too.
Dustin Poirier. You know, this guy, Michael Johnson, is one of the missing elites that should be up in the echelon that weight class, but he's struggling right now, and it's sad for me to see, because I know the passion that he has inside, and I know how much he gives for each and every single one of his camps. And it's just heartbreaking. But
it reminds me of, remember how sometimes in the NBA, I remember in the early 2000s, like the Western Conference would be so stacked with teams. The East would be so barren that like a crappy team like my team, the 0-2 Celtics with Antoine Walker and Paul Pierce, that team sucked. Yet they shot 53s a game and suddenly they're in the Eastern Conference Finals. And you look at the West, you'd be like, oh man, look at that seventh seed. If they were in the East, they'd be a player. If Michael Johnson had a different schedule or was a different time in history, he'd be a player and a title contender. But somebody has to lose when you keep matching the best of the best. And he's, you know, it seems like he's piled up losses. Yet when you really look at that resume, it's like, oh, yeah, he lost to Khabib when he rocked him. Oh, yeah, he lost to this guy when he was in that fight. Oh, yeah, the Justin Gaethje fight of the year that time. He had, you know, Gaethje looking like he was ready to go. I mean, somebody's got to lose, Rashad.
No? But somebody has to lose, but not for nothing, though. Like, I don't agree with how he's being matched up. Straight up. I think that the way that his team is matching him up, it's about it looks like they're letting him pick the fights after he just lost. You know what I'm saying? Where he's like, yeah, I'll fight him, but it's not about what's the best for his style. I think that Michael Johnson is always, you know, Michael's always struggled against the grapplers who can grapple at that level. So let's get him until he gets his confidence back. Let's get him with somebody who's gonna stand in the center and burn it out with him. So you know what I'm saying, to get him back feeling himself again. And then we start putting him against the matchup with guys, you know, with the grappling and stuff like that, the ones he struggled with. But I think that, you know, I don't think that his team is doing him a service because they keep, you know, going into where his weak spot is with these matchups that they're selecting for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And shout out to Brian Boom Kelleher moving up to featherweight last night, getting a big victory, knocking out Hunter Azur. They keep burying Kelleher on the undercards here, but he's on a nice little run. All right, Rashad, we're going to throw it to Calvin Kattar, the rising featherweight. Joe Rogan calls him the dark horse of the division. And after that knockout of a well-tanned Jeremy Stephens over the weekend, we're going to hear about what Kattar's future plans might be. We'll throw to that good old Boston, I know he doesn't call himself the Boston Strangler. What does he call himself? Something related to Boston, all right? Yeah, he's wicked awesome. It's Calvin Kattar coming at you. Enjoy.
I feel great, man. A little beat up, but beat up with a win. I'd rather be beat up with a win than healthy with a loss, you know?
Absolutely, man. Congratulations on such an exciting victory, which, you know, I respect the price you pay to get it, but how good does it feel, man, to get a highlight real win after such a crazy buildup to get there?
Yeah, there's nothing like it. I think throughout that camp, I was really able to just focus all my, like, energy towards, you know, the mental preparation. I felt like there's a lot of chaos going on, and to be able to try to dial in, it was a good opportunity to do that. You know, all things considered, and it was a nice, all that focus was a nice distraction from what's really kind of going on. And now that I'm on the other side, I just can't wait to get back to work and you know, keep pushing forward.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge win, man. You come off that loss to Khabib, but one in which you look really good. And then to package that up with stopping an always game Jeremy Stephens, and a guy who, look, when he missed weight, you know, fight history, guys that tend to miss weight end up being more dangerous. I don't know if that's because they don't have to cut or they're angry about giving up the purse. But that first round on Saturday against Jeremy Stephens, man, he made it hell in there, and you were able to really stay above water. How tough was that open for you?
Yeah, I was just, you know, calculating, doing some, just building up some data, you know, from when he was giving me that first round. And then I felt like I was able to, he definitely edged me on the first, but by the second I was able to sit down, find my combinations a little bit better, tighten up those gaps, and then I was able to capitalize for a big shot. So I wonder, you know, if it had gone into the deeper waters, would he have been able to, you know, keep that first round pace, but didn't have to find out after the second. You know, I landed a big shot.
He had a great tan, so shout out to Jeremy Stephens on that. But he's always a knockout threat in there. When he loses, it seems to be to very good competition. Was that a strike, the one that you finished him with, that right elbow? Was that something you had thought of coming in, or how does that come into your mind at that moment? Because it seemed like such a sneaky and dangerous strike to land.
Yeah, definitely. We were working it the last 5 months with my Thai mitt holder, Jake Manini. We've been working elbows, knees, kicks, long range weapons, and then also with Bazooka Joe in Canada. You know, he was helping me out. We went out there, visited him, got some insight from him. But I got a lot of good feedback, and then me and Jake just getting to work every week, you know, landing big elbow shots followed by knees. And this way, when it came out come fight night, it just happened kind of smooth, you know. But, yeah, we were practicing all camp, especially because Jeremy's a tough guy. You know, like you said, I don't know how many guys have finished him with a punch to the chin. You know, if you're going to put Jeremy out, I think you got to do it with an elbow or a knee or something of the body.
Yeah, no question about that. We saw your reaction after the fight. You mentioned you were upset at first when he missed weight. Did you have any thought of not going through with that fight after, you know, I mean, this is not a normal fight. At that point, did you have any thought about not going forward?
See, I think that's the difference. Like, I was never looking for ways out all 5 months. Finally, to dig deeper. I wasn't looking for a way out. I was looking for, you know, a way to keep it. And I felt like when Jeremy missed weight, that was, I just had to give him a reason to quit come fight night. But I felt like the work already been done. And last thing I'm going to do is let it slip, you know, through, especially made it to the end of the race, man. I'm ready to cross that finish line. But, yeah, definitely unprofessional, especially where he was the first one kind of getting on the scale. That bothered me more than, you know, most of the things. But at the end of the day, you know, we had a great fight, and then he came up, shook my hand after, so all good there, great fight, and good luck to whatever his next move is.
Yeah, absolutely. What does this say about your where you belong in these featherweight rankings now that you've got this stretch in which, you know, your UFC run, what are you, 6-2, something like that, and you've beaten some names here. What does this win do for you?
You know, I just hope it puts me up there with the other contenders, and let's fight it out to see who gets these title shots. You know, I think that at least puts me in the mix in the name of guys competing to get that opportunity.
How different are you from the guy who debuted with UFC in 2017? How much specifically, in what ways have you evolved?
Oh, man, it would be a long night for that guy. We squared off right now. I've been improving a lot. And I feel like I'm still just scratching the surface. These last 5 months, I was really able to dial in. But I'm learning more now than I have my whole career. And it's I really feel like I'm starting to, find my groove.
Absolutely. It's great to see a big-time win. Let's talk about the card and the experience. You know, we sort of – there's so many unprecedented elements about, you know, this pandemic and the quarantine life, and I'm sure your training camp was not the normal like. But arriving in Jacksonville, getting tested, how much did that sort of, like, weigh on you compared to normal in terms of that mindset coming in?
Yeah, it only weighs on you if you let it. I acknowledge it and moved on from it. Just everything about it, you know, it was just little checkpoints all throughout the weekend. First it was the testing, then it was getting in that first sweat, you know, trying to shake things out. Then it just constantly, like I usually say, I mean, just trying to be in that moment each day. And then when fight day came, it was just a day. Now it's over. Now my main focus is recovery and just staying dialed into the moment, man, and not being distracted by things that are out of your control. And I was able to work that a lot, not only fight week, but the last 5 months. I really feel dialed in now, and I want to ride that momentum into the next one.
What is a more difficult moment to get through, eating a right hand from Jeremy Stephens or having a foot-long Q-tip placed through your nose to swab your brain for the COVID test?
Well, if you're landing a right elbow, a big right elbow, when you're eating the right hand, you don't feel so bad about it. But like I told the other guys, I'd trade a rook for a queen any day of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There was a lot of unique elements inside the arena in the fact that there's no fans, which, you know, we'd seen a couple months back in Brazil. But I feel like this time it was even more apparent that you guys were going to be able to hear the announce team and potentially use that information. How clearly could you hear the words coming out from the likes of Daniel Cormier while you're in the midst of focusing on the fight?
Yeah, that was pretty funny having someone commentate a fight.
It's like Rob Font in the gym just talking shit, getting the whole gym hyped. He landed a big shot. He's like, oh, you're going to take that? You're going to take that? And that's pretty much what Cormier and them were doing. It was pretty funny the way it played out, but it was more so when you're over by their corner. Other than that, I was really trying to listen to my coaches and my corners.
Could you hear the coaches easier than in a normal fight?
Yeah, definitely. It was a little bit, everything was a little bit more calm, aside from obviously the hyped up pressure, but internal pressure, you know, want to perform. And with the way it all played out, I like to learn off wins, and I feel like I was able to take some good positives away from it, and also some things I want to work on for the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you be into another empty arena match? Is that, was that experience something that that affected you at all in terms of?
As long as it's in a cage, I don't care where we go, what we do. anything more than that just adds to the story and the memory.
Well, speaking of stories, I wanted to ask you for a story here. Whereas you debuted with the UFC in 2017, but you've been fighting professionally going back to 2007 when you were 19. And I look up and down your resume, man, you fought for Elite XC back in 2008. I'm not sure people realize that you fought on a Kimbo Slice card when he fought James Thompson in Newark, New Jersey. You got any good stories or memories from that day?
Man, I just got done training with the Diaz brothers out there in Cali for like a week. Blew my mind. They were just next level at that time. And, you know, came back, and I just I had to start keeping training up at that level. I was exposed to it, you know, going to visit them. But on the way back, a week before the fight, I got strapped, kind of made some beginner mistakes in the cage, and I paid for it. But set the tone for training camps moving forward, and it was pretty wild being on a Kimbo Slice undercard.
Yeah, that is good stuff right there. How soon do you think you can get back in? It's such an uncertain future, but you know, Dana White has said they're going to put off three cards in eight nights this week in Jacksonville. Business appears like it could be back to normal right now, starting every weekend. So what's your future looking like?
I definitely want to stay busy. My plan was 2020 to go 3-0, and that's my goal. And right now, good checkpoint, but, you know, looking to finish the year strong, ride this momentum, and hopefully take something soon, and then followed by maybe another one. When my teammate Rob Font is getting healthy, maybe by the end of the year, it'd be nice.
Dana announced that it looks like a featherweight title rematch is coming between Holloway and Volkanovski. You have any thoughts on how that may play out?
No, that'll be a good scrap. It's always great when you get a chance to, you know, watch some top-notch fights and get some good feedback on what all their styles are. You know, right now, all these guys are potential opponents, and I'm gonna enjoy some study and watch them compete. They had a hell of a fight last time. I look forward to the next one.
Big storyline that came out of this card, which you were part of, you were one of the stars of the night, was Henry Cejudo, after he finishes Dominic Cruz, announces retirement. That catches us all off guard in the media, but then you see people like John Jones tweeting like, hey, wake up, people. This is a contract thing. What was your thoughts on him making that announcement?
Man, who knows? Who knows? That's like his rants are almost up there with Tony Ferguson's. You just kind of, you know, you take them for what they are, and it's a persona, man. It's just who they are. But you gotta love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anybody who can turn it up a notch and create a character, or just, you know, be able to market themselves beyond just fighting, I have a lot of respect for wherever Henry decides to go, whether this is real or not. How about the Calvin Kattar brand? Pretty strong right now. How's your trash talk game? I don't remember seeing you in anything too heated or crazy.
Yeah, no, I try to keep even keel, man. I mean, unless they want a problem, if they want one, they can ask for it. But other than that, I kind of stick to myself and just try to stay working in the gym. And I'm on my, like, Tom Brady, shit, you know, just real quiet, socially awkward. Maybe that's only what I was saying, you know, just a little misunderstood.
Joe Rogan did call you heading into this fight on his podcast the dark horse of the division. I think the world saw that on Saturday night. any comments, anything to say to your fans, to the admirers out there about what the next year is going to look like in your career?
Well, I see myself, like I said, just getting started. We're not done yet. Keep that Bill Belichick mindset and just keep working hard for hopefully another big moment opportunity and just keep trying to capitalize, put these together. Let's get some streaks going and just earn ourselves some more high pressure situations, man. I'm excited to be at the competing at the highest level with the top contenders in the world.
I love it. Thanks so much for your time, man. Best of luck. Get some rest, clear that head. Big things to come. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much, man.
All right, special thanks to CK there, Calvin Kattar. Rashad, I'm always asking myself, you know, I don't talk to fighters a lot after they win. It's always preparing for the fight, right? You're in the promotion of the fight. Right. Now I kind of understand. I felt bad. Calvin Kattar was a good sport and a great interview, but you could hear the pain in his voice a couple days removed. It's a big win, but you got to pour some out of that jug to get those wins, man. Have you historically done interviews like right after a really tough win?
Yeah, I have. You know, it's a process, you know, because you're so raw. You're still going through a lot of thoughts and emotions, you know.
I know that after I'll have a long day mowing the lawn, it's tough for me to get out of a chair at the end of the day. I can't imagine being in like a 5-round fight or something, and then 2 days later, you know, you're trying to like stand up and live your life. You guys are warriors, all right, Rashad? Freaking warriors.
You know, the hardest part is just getting on a plane and flying home the next day. That's the hardest part, you know, when your legs are all beaten up and they're all bruised up sitting in a plane for 5 hours. Ooh, that's brutal.
Absolutely. All right, let's get into – oh, first of all, shout out to Khabib Nurmagomedov's father, who is reportedly in a coma here in Dagestan with an illness that I believe they were reporting it as a severe pneumonia, not necessarily COVID, but it's gotten worse. You've seen a statement put out by Dana White in UFC. Wow, Rashad, we know the importance that this man has had as a mentor and trainer for Khabib and a lot of other fighters in that, you know, Dagestan wrestling system there. Our thoughts and prayers for sure. For I'm not going to attempt to mispronounce Mr. Nurmagomedov's first name, but he's been unable to travel to Khabib's fights due to visa issues. But the guy's the real deal. Really, really hope that he can come out of this.
Yeah, what a great guy as well too. You know, he's one of the most caring guys that I've met. You know, always comes and gives me a hug and just. Always trying to show some technique, and one of the strongest guys too. Old guy, he can grab a hold of you and wrestle you down. Like
got that old
believe.
Russian Fedor, old man strength going on.
Yeah,
there.
It's crazy how strong he is.
I love my favorite thing about the relationship between father and son. There is how much Khabib's dad like holds legitimate, like not fear, but like influence on him. Like yes. Remember after Khabib had that post. Fight attack at UFC 229 and the interviews afterwards, he's like, yeah, my dad's gonna smash me. Like he said, matter of fact, like, yep, my dad's gonna absolutely smash
me.
You know, it's like the dad is still
my dad is still my dad, even though I'm the baddest man in the world, my dad is still my dad. You know, that's awesome, man. And that's how it should be, you know.
Absolutely.
I am his daddy.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Connor. All right, let's get into this weekend's card. It's night number 3 in Jacksonville of these 8 crazy nights for UFC. And this is a damn good fight night card. Oh, yeah. It'll go down Saturday night. This is a ESPN card, not a plus one, on the big one. And there's a heavyweight main event. Alistair Overeem, always the tough out, the veteran, against Walt Harris. And the storyline here, of course, Rashad, is that the 36-year-old Harris just might be certainly a future of this division, coming off a streak of 3 wins and a no contest in his last 4. But certainly with the situation of his stepdad daughter having gone missing late last year and then eventually found dead, this is adding a much deeper meaning and storyline heading into this fight for Walt Harris. How do you think, Rashad, this type of distraction / pain / you know, get up and move is going to affect Walt Harris in this fight?
I think this is what Walt Harris needs. You know, whenever you have something traumatic like that happens, and physicality is your outlet, that's what you need to do. You know, so I think that this is going to allow him to heal at a deeper level. But more importantly, I think that for Walt, he's going to have to learn to harness these emotions that he's feeling going into this fight. You know, Walt is a fighter who already fights emotionally already. And then with this in the back burner, it could be even more combustible. And going against a guy like Alistair Overeem, who is a very witty, witty vet, who does a really good job of setting traps and so patient to the point where he makes guys get frustrated. And in their frustration, they put themselves in bad positions. So Walt is going to have to watch that he doesn't do that and watch that he doesn't allow that emotional fire that he's carrying in him to run to the point where it puts him in a position to be on the end of of some powerful shots of Alistair Overeem.
The recent no contest I mentioned was a 2018 split decision win for Walt Harris over Andre Arlovski that was eventually overturned when he tested positive for a banned substance. But around that, Rashad, you've got three finish wins in a row here for Harris against Daniel Spitz, Sergey Spivak, and Aleksei Oleinik. At 6'5", the big ticket is certainly a big dude, a tough out. What do you need to see out of him, though, craft-wise? I mean, look, if he beats Alistair Overeem, you're about to say he's ready. He's that's the certain level right now where Overeem's at, that if you can beat him like Jair Rozenstruik just did, you're ready to really make that leap. What do you need to see from Walt Harris's game, though, that will tell you he's ready for the bigger fish?
Well, I'm going to need to see some patience in his game and being able to, dissect Alistair's game without putting himself in a position where he's getting caught with those big shots and where he's getting frustrated. I think a lot of guys, they have a hard time solving a puzzle like Alistair Overeem. And I think Alistair Overeem is the test to show, okay, this guy definitely can be somebody we push, But I think what Baltley's going to have to do is, because Alistair has that style where he waits around and he waits for guys to make that mistake, you have to draw Alistair out. You have to draw that reaction out. Anytime a guy is waiting for you, you have to utilize fakes and feints in order to just inundate them with activity so they don't know when you're coming. And then that's when Walt, being a fast, explosive striker who throws punches with really good range, he gets a really good range in his punches, he can starch Alistair Overeem, who's already taken a lot of shots in his career, who does not have the ability to take big shots from a Walt Harris.
Yeah, Overeem 39. He does lose in this, last 4 or 5 year run when he steps up to the upper elite, but he's always able to rebuild himself with big wins over guys that he needs to, to come back and be back in this picture. So this is a very good main event. I'm really interested to see if Harris can make that leap. And obviously with his personal story, it's hard not to cheer for him in there. I say all the time, Rashad, women's strawweights, they always deliver. Some people corrected me and said, your theory's great, but that Esparza-Waterson fight wasn't high drama last Saturday. We'll stick that in your crow, because we got another great one at 115 here as Claudia Gadelha looks to try to showcase, Rashad, all that work she's done by moving her camp to New Jersey, moving her who's the trainer there, the guy you used to work with?
Mark Henry,
that's right. She's really worked hard here at trying to find a chapter two of her career, well-rounding her game from what is a great wrestling base. She was supposed to show us that in her last bout earlier this year, but I just can't find names. Who was her opponent that pulled out with a bad weight cut? The Alexa Grasso. There you go. Didn't get a chance to show us it, but she's going to fight a resurgent Angela Hill. And Angie was a gatekeeper for many years, Rashad, but at 33, she's won three in a row. This is a damn good fight right here. How do you think these styles are going to match up?
Well, it's interesting. You know, Claudia Gadelha, she's not the Claudia that we once knew before, and we're still getting to know her now under Mark Henry. She has a heavy grappling dominant game, but whenever you go under Mark Henry, you start to fall in love with the stand-up aspect because he almost makes you. And that's because of the fact that the way Mark Henry teaches, it's one of the most intricate ways I've ever learned from any coach. It's a code system, and this code system is techniques, and these techniques would be like 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, whatever the combination would be. But these combinations, was whether it's 1, 2, 3 or 2, 3, or whatever the case may be, they will have a name attached to them, and the name would be something that you're familiar with. So maybe like a daughter, or maybe like someone you care about. So then when he's communicating these combinations to you, he just says a name, and you understand a whole concept just by him saying a name. So when you get underneath the tutelage of Mark Henry, you go to Mark Henry school and you learn all his codes and everything. But once you get in that system, it's a system that works, and it's a system that you fall in love with the stand-up. So Claudia, I look for in this fight, she's going to be trying to utilize those stand-up skills that she gained from Mark Henry. And I think that's where Angela Overkill is going to have her greatest opportunity to find her success, because Angela has been looking phenomenal on her feet and those elbows that she's been utilizing. You know, I follow her on Instagram, and she's been working those elbows, and she's been hitting, you know, she looks really, really good. And her husband is her coach, so she's getting work all the time.
Yeah, it's a great fight. And I follow Claudia on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry about that, but she's in great shape right now. Shout out to Claudia. Every time you say Mark Henry, I think Salmon Jacket, WWE. It's just not hard not to.
I got a lot left in the tank.
Shout out to WWE Hall of Famer Mark Henry right there. Love this fight. Love to see if look, Angie Hill's figured some things out, like we mentioned. But if Claudia gets by this and can get further up that title picture, man, I'd see her a third time against JJ. She wants you on a bad another time. You know, I'd see her again against the likes of an Andrade. There's some thunder Claudia can make. She's marketable. She's fun. I like when a fighter hits that sort of turning point, Rashad, you know, around 30, 31, where they say, look, I'm either going down that slope or I got to stop and figure it out. I mean, we just talked about Glover Teixeira, you know, in his late 30s, hitting that point where I got to figure out a way to revive, learn again. It's crazy, man. I love that, you know, age used to be in this game, you know, a death sentence. But yeah, we're really seeing now so many fighters. It's not just taking great care of your body, but adding, you know, not being too proud that you can't add new tricks to the game. And we're seeing a lot of guys, you know, be able to sustain, and a lot of girls be able to sustain later in their career. It's great to see, you know, you too.
Yeah, all right.
Rashad, where are we at with this comeback here? Okay. I know we shelved it for a while.
You know, I don't know, you know, I feel as if, like, you know, if something happens or something comes along and I'm still training, then I'll take it. I had to take a break though, cause I had eye surgery. So I had to get something cleaned up in my eye. I had cataract surgery a while ago, so I had to get something moved around in there because it was, while I was sparring, it moved free. So then I had to get it reattached, but everything's good now.
Okay. I do a new series on Showtime Extreme called Morning Combat Strike Force Classics with the great Scott Coker, in which we look back on big-time fights over history. Maybe I'll get on the horn and be like,
Put a word in for your boy.
Yeah, here's a great idea for a fight, Scott, okay? In Bellator, it's called Machida Sugar Rashad Part 2, all right? It's called Receipt Season Coming, all right? That's what it's called, okay? I'll pull
that. Hey, why do I need a manager? I got BC.
That's what I'm talking about. Ali, take a step back. All right. Hey, here's the fight I want to see most Saturday night. I think it's going to be your fight of the night. Dan Ige, rising featherweight, Hawaiian, all action. Has a nice striking system there in terms of volume that he's putting out, but he's fighting the master of violence, Edson Barboza here. Rashad, how concerning is a wrong word, but Barboza's 35,
yeah,
lost 4 of 6, and he's moving down in weight. You've moved down in weight late in your career to try to find new life at middleweight. Mm-hmm. Should this be looked at as a desperate move for Edson Barboza here entering this fight?
You know, that remains to be seen. You know, I have to still look at where he's coming from, you know, and really talk to him and just kind of see where his mindset is. But typically speaking, yeah, that is, you know, that is an indication where he's just kind of finding, you know, not he's running into a little bit of uncertainty, you know. And as you get older, the last thing you want to do is cut weight if your body's not naturally going that way. You know what I'm saying? Because if you're cutting weight when you shouldn't be, then you're putting a lot of stress on a body that's already taken a lot, you know. So you want to move up, but if you're losing, you know, size and you're losing stuff like that, then getting to a proper weight class could be better for you. But at the same time, Edson is a fighter who was to me was an almost that guy, you know. He's been in there with the best, and he's definitely one of the best, but he was just never at that level, you know. And I think he's still hoping and trying to reach that, and maybe that's what he's thinking. Dropping down to his weight class would be a push to try to get him into that trajectory. But nevertheless, he does have an outstanding skill set that gives him a lot of pause for any fighter, and a big challenge for fighters, especially a guy like Dan Ige, who's now stepping up to the upper echelon and fighting guys like Edson Barboza. You know, Dan Ige has a wrestling game, that grappling game that he's so proud of because he's been under the tutelage of the, you know, the Khabib Nurmagomedovs and the Dagestanian fighters because he's done a few camps with them. So he's got that in his mindset, and it's going to be interesting to see if he can implement that style, because he called himself he has a nickname. It's like Khabib something Ige or something like that. He has a nickname like that. So
yeah, I like the pace that Ige can put out there. In defense of Barboza, he only loses to the super elites. By the way, I was at ATT with our guy Brandon Wise of CBS Sports one time interviewing Dos Santos, and I just heard this violent whap 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 whap. I'm like, whoa, is somebody shooting? They shoot and made you look. It's Edson Barboza doing like spinning back kicks and stuff. I mean, this guy is just, it's scary in person to see a guy that vicious. Obviously, we want to see if he can shed this weight easily and still look strong. Ige's won five in a row, but you know, fresh off that split decision win over Mirsad Septiktank. But this is a whole new level of opponent here. So can Ige use wrestling volume and avoid the big strike? Because this is a different type of finisher he's going against.
It's going to be tough, and I say that because Edson Barboza, as much as he's a stand-up fighter, he's actually pretty proficient in stopping takedowns, and he has the ability to grapple himself. You know, I trained alongside him in Jersey, and I was actually really surprised at the ability that he had with grappling and on the ground himself. It's just like one of those things that, you know, you get used to fighting a certain kind of way, and you never utilize all your skills, and I think that's the case with Edson Barboza. He has so many tools in his case that he still has not brought out in a fight, and maybe dropping down to a smaller weight class will allow him to do that. But with Dan Ige, he's going to have to make this fight a war of attrition. You know, he's going to have to make it a ugly fight where he causes Edson Barboza to fight from that place and come out of his technical style. And I think that's the only way he's going to be able to beat a guy like Edson Barboza, who's very strong and who's very explosive with his striking ability.
I believe Dan Ige is a part of the Alliance MMA, the Ali Extended.
Yeah, he is. He's actually Ali's assistant. So he's like a manager. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I forgot Ige's got this like promotional thing he's going after, right?
Yeah, he's
or like, not promotional management. Yeah, yeah.
He's like a manager.
He's got the entrepreneurship going on there. So shout out. That's called, what is it called? Dominance MMA. That's what it's called.
Dominance MMA. MMA, yeah.
Stable, getting bigger there. Anytime you look at a fight card and you see Eric Anders, your boy, there's going to be some violence involved. He's going in there against Krzysztof Jotko. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right.
Jotko.
They're going to bang, Rashad. They're going to bang. You got Anders trying to get three in a row. I always forget he was a linebacker with Alabama, dude. Like that's big time athleticism right there. That's the elite. What would happen if they handed off to prime Rashad Evans at halfback and Eric Anders was coming up the middle?
I'll shake his drawers off. That's what would happen. I don't like to talk trash, but that's what I would do.
You could hit the circle button on then just.
Yeah. And Eric Anders, man, you know, I really like this dude, you know, and I like him because, you know, he's one of those fighters. You can see his ability and his skill, but I like his nature about himself. You know, he was a fighter who ran into a tough time and was just honest and open about how he was going into the fights. Like he was like, "Hey, I'm freezing. I'm having a hard time mentally out there." And you don't see a lot of fighters who volunteer or tells that information how they struggle mentally. And he's done things on a mental level to make sure he's getting stronger. And you can see the results in his last three fights. You know, he's seemed to really figure it out. And he's got a tough fight with Jocko, who flies under the radar, but has he's sneaky good. You know, Jocko's sneaky good. He has some power and he has some techniques that can give Eric Anders some pause. So for Anders, he's going to have to utilize that powerful game, you know, utilize those big explosive takedowns coupled with that heavy ground and pound. And then he can get back up to his feet and land some big shots.
I think this card is sneaky good because this main card opener, this featherweight bout, I'm woke to Song Yadong. This 22-year-old from China, Mr. Faber's boy over there at Team Alpha Male, Rashad, he's 7-0-1 in his last eight. And that majority draw against Cody Stammen last fight kind of really only happened because they took a point away for an illegal knee early. Song Yadong's on a nice little run here. It looks like we got something there, so to speak. But how tough of a challenge is Marlon Vera?
Well, I mean, it's a big challenge, you know. Vera's one of that guy is he's a dog in there, and you know, whenever he's in there, it's gonna be a scrap, you know. So he's gonna have to bring that game. He's gonna have to keep that mind strong. And BC, starting off the night, you know, you have a lot of pressure. Just that you want to have the momentum go your way, and especially in an empty arena. So it's going to be one of those fights where both of these fighters are coming here to make a statement, and it's going to be explosions right out the gate
tonight. Oh, yeah. 5 wins in a row for Vera. Song Yadong brings it. This is going to be a fun night. On that prelim card, you got a bunch of names we like. Matt Brown coming back against Miguel Baeza. Darren the Damage Elkins is going to be in the second fight. You know there's going to be bloodshed when that guy shows up. Good-looking card here. By the way, we didn't mention it, but tough to see Marvin Vettori's opportunity from Wednesday night fall apart at the last minute when Carl Roberson was unable to complete that weight cut down to middleweight, and then you saw that video. Did you see that in which Vettori went nuts in the hotel lobby and tried to attack Roberson after they talked some trash? When you consider, Rashad, that you know you put a lot of money into these camps, he had that USADA hiccup that really wasn't his fault that kept him out. He's had to be inactive. Fights have fallen through. Can you understand the passion that Vettori showed there when you're trying to get paid? You're trying to improve your standing, and others are kind of getting in your way.
Yeah, I mean, and especially right now. You know, right now where we are at as a world and everybody, you know, financial situation may not be looking the best. You want to get paid. And, you know, to have something like that happen when we're competing under these the situation, it's even more of a stick in the spine, you know. And you know, it's hard to have a camp in these, you know, with the situation as it is right now, and to be able to put the camp together and have people allocate their time has to be more of a financial burden as well, too, if you're putting a camp together. So he definitely came out of money in a lot of areas. So it's just when you bleed that much financially and you don't get the bleed in the cage, yeah, it's frustrating.
It is. And you know, we've talked about the fighter disparity in terms of fighter pay. When you finally reach a certain level, people stop complaining because you're getting paid. But when you're climbing that ladder and you're getting 20 and 20 and then you don't get an opportunity to fight, it's rough, Rashad. It's a rough game. Rough. I mean, you know, there were rumors that last pay-per-view on last Saturday night, great card, UFC 249, we loved it. May have done 700,000 buys on ESPN+. You know how many millions of that? Yet the total gate payout on paper was like $3 million. That's like, you know, 12% or something like that, if the math is right. I know fighters get stuff more behind the scenes bonuses that we don't know about. But, you know, you see a guy getting that blown up with passion and anger. I hope there's a future that these guys get paid more, because this is such a freaking brutal sport, Rashad. I mean, it's so damn brutal. And we're tuning in at home in our quarantine going, give him more fights. Just bleed, baby. Face the pain. And I'm calling up Calvin Kattar 3 days later after a win, and he's like, hello. You know, I feel for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think our day would come. You know, I think the day of the fighters will come. I think it's right now. You know, when you look at all the great sports, you know, like, you know, basketball, football, and all these and all these other big three sports that have went through this period, this infancy period, where they, you know, had to go through this in order to establish the rights that the players and everything have. And UFC, you know, we're still going through that as fighters. And, you know, eventually one day the fighters will come together and there'll be some kind of union. And, you know, who knows if that would make things better. But, you know, it seems like it'd be a good idea.
Yeah, it would need, you'd need though a prime fighter with a ton of leverage who would be willing to like sacrifice his own slice of the pie to try to push for everyone else. And I think that the system is set up now, like I was mentioning, where, you know, once you get there, so to speak, quote unquote, get there, you're like, I ain't giving this up, man. I bled for years for this, but you know, it would take a guy.
I don't even think it would take a guy. I would think it would take managers coming together to speak to their fighters and getting their fighters to see that it's the way to do it. You know, but I think the reason why it hasn't happened is because managers are so adversarial for each other because they're competing for fighters, that they have not decided to come together and say, hey, we got a common problem and we all can get more money if we all came together and decided to do this. But
very similar to in boxing when people are like, why can't we get the great fights like UFC? Well, it's because all the promoters are like, I can keep my little slice of the pie guaranteed here if I don't risk it against somebody. Whatever. All right. Hey, great show again, Sugar Rashad Evans. It's UFC week. It's 8 crazy nights, and this is fun, man. I could do more of these weeknight cards, breaking down the next morning, previewing the next one. Thank you all for listening. Sugar Rashad, you got anything to say to the people on the way out?
No. Thank you, people. I appreciate you, and keep watching these MMA fights.
Enjoy these fights. Two words. We out.
We out.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.